Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm Pam Stack, your host. Today is book release day for my guest, Ellie Alexander, who writes the culinary mystery series called The Bake Shop Mysteries. We're going to talk about her newest entry in this series called Fudge and Jury in just a second. Don't go away. Welcome back. This is Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Happy New Year to those of you I have not spoken to yet. I'm very excited because my friend, author Ellie Alexander, is back with me today because she has a new bake shop mystery that is releasing today. So I want you to take down this phone number. It's 347-633-9609. That's the call-in number. The first person to call in is going to win a copy of Fudge and Jury, Ellie Alexander's new book in the series. In the meantime, let me welcome Ellie to the show. Hello, Ellie Alexander. Happy New Year and congratulations on the new book.
Happy New Year to you and thanks so much for having me. And it's actually Pub Day, which is always so exciting.
It is so exciting, and I have to say that you always have been so generous with me. You gifted me a copy of the book beforehand, the galley, and I loved it, and I just posted my review on Amazon, and I will go to our book review crew page in Facebook today, and I will also post a little bit longer review. It's so much fun. Murder and chocolate, oh my gosh, you can't get any better. You have to tell everyone about Fudge and Jury, please.
I know. Well, I mean, I think that chocolate pairs well with anything, but especially in this book, I had a hard time focusing on writing because I just wanted to taste so much.
I love the premise.
Uh-huh. Yeah, isn't it great? It's springtime in Ashland, Oregon, which is where all of the mysteries have taken place thus far. And Jules, our pastry chef, has been invited to be a showpiece vendor at the annual Chocolate Fest in Ashland, Oregon. And so she and her mom, Helen, are whipping up all these beautiful cakes and torts and chocolate truffles. And actually, there is a real chocolate fest every March in Ashland. So I did go down and had to sample a lot just for authenticity, of course.
Of course.
It's only fair.
I particularly liked their chocolate fettuccine. Is that what it was? It was chocolate pasta anyway. Chocolate pasta, and I was thinking, is that a real thing? And I guess it is, isn't it?
It's a real thing. I had it at a restaurant in Portland, Oregon, which is where I live, about maybe like 3 years ago now. It was on the menu at this Italian restaurant as a specialty dessert item, and I was so intrigued by it. It's actually, so you make the noodles out of this chocolate pasta dough and then drizzle it with white chocolate and pistachios and fresh fruit.
God.
It's amazing. So I wanted to try my hand at it for this book. It seemed perfect.
Oh, it just was so intriguing. And the truffles seem like a really difficult thing to make, but you make it sound so easy in your books. Are they difficult to make, Ellie?
No, not at all. And in fact, I interviewed quite a few chocolatiers when I was working on this book because I am a pretty good home baker, but chocolate is not necessarily my medium. So I wanted to make sure I got it right. And I had always had that same impression, like you, Pam, where you think, oh, they must spend hours and hours laboring over them. But they're really easy. Basically, you melt some chocolate and cream and let it set up, and then use a melon scoop to put them into balls and then dust them with whatever you want. It's super simple.
You know, we have a chocolatier here in Lee County in Southwest Florida who is very well known in the area and who's making quite a reputation for himself. His name is Norman Love. So I would like you to go to his website afterward, because his shop is not far from where I live, and I want you to pick out some chocolates, and I'm going to send them to you.
Oh my God!
So thank you for all the books that you sent to me. You will, and they're not chocolates that are so sweet your teeth hurt, but they're so infused with all these wonderful things. And I have to tell you, he had one at one time. It may have been seasonal, I'm not sure, but that was with passion fruit, and it stands out in my mind because, even though we're talking about your new book, Fudge and Jury, today, I know you have another book coming out probably toward the end of the year. I'm going to make an assumption. You can correct me if I'm wrong, called A Crime of Passion Fruit. So it just seems to go hand in hand. So I'm going to send you some Norman Love chocolates, and you're going to tell me what you think, okay? And he's actually not like your chocolatier who dies in the book. He's very different than that. He's a very, very nice man, a very nice man. So, but he's beloved in this community. So I'm going to send you Norman Love chocolates after you tell me which kind I should get for you, okay?
Deal. I will take chocolate anytime. Are you kidding me?
There you go. So, I'm really happy to see that in Amazon you're getting so many wonderful, wonderful reviews. You know, from everybody it seems, you're just getting tons and tons of great reviews. So I want to ask you, when you see that, are you happiest to get reader reviews, or are you happiest to get reviews from your contemporaries? People who maybe write in the same genre, like Jesse Crockett, or, you know, and of course it's always nice to get something from Library Journal and book, you know, Booklist or Publishers Weekly or Kirkus. But which ones make the most impact on you?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, honestly, I think every writer will tell you that getting reviews is the nicest thing you can do, because that's how readers find books. So I think first and foremost, getting reviews from readers is really just so humbling. And I've been lucky and fortunate that readers have connected with the characters. One of the things that I try to do in my writing, even though it's fiction and really no one gets bumped off in real life in Ashland, is try to create characters who feel really real. Sometimes thus far in, since this is book 5 in the series, I'm so attached to the characters that when I'm writing, especially in the first draft or so of the book, I forget about the murder and the mystery part because I want to know what's happening in their lives. And I get that feedback from readers all the time too, which I think is great. But then I have to remind myself, like, okay, no, we got to get back to the nuts and bolts of the mystery too.
Well, let's talk about some of your characters, of course, because I think that the core community that you always mention in your books, really, you're very generous with your ancillary characters, and I think that brings in a really good sense of camaraderie with your reader. So to start off with, there is Jules and her mom, Helen. Jules is, you correct me if I'm wrong, but you know I love your book, so I think I've got this right. Jules is a pastry chef who spent a good portion of her career on a cruise ship as a pastry chef, where she met her estranged husband, Carlos, who you and I agree looks like Antonio Banderas. And so when she finds out a secret that he's kept, she comes home to Ashland to work in the family bake shop called Tort, that is now run by her widowed mother, Helen. But you have some really interesting younger people who work at Tort also. Will you share that information, please, and tell us about those characters?
Absolutely. And you got it perfectly right. So, yes, good job there.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, Ashland is a real place, as most people know, although I don't know, some people maybe not on the West Coast aren't as familiar with it, but it's the home of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. So it's this very charming Elizabethan town in the southernmost corner of the state. And so there, it's a very small town, but throughout the season of the theater being in session, tons and tons of tourists come in. Excuse me. So I really wanted to capture that vibe. And in doing so, I spent a lot of time in Ashland at coffee shops watching. And the vibe there is these younger college students or sort of outdoor lovers, adventure lovers, are working in the coffee shops while maybe they're trying to get a job moonlighting at the theater company or they're there for school. So I tried to incorporate characters like that. So we have Sterling, who is kind of alternative, but this sort of deep poet of a soul. And then Stephanie, who's also alternative. She has purple hair and is kind of surly, but is this amazing baker. And then Andy, who's kind of this all-American football player who is also the barista.
But he's also the latte wizard. He's the coffee guru in the shop, isn't he?
He is the coffee mixologist, yes. So he's constantly coming up with fun, creative drinks. And part of the relationship with Jules and the staff is that she tries to give them freedom and leeway. She's there to help mentor them in their process of becoming coffee artists or pastry chefs, but she wants them to find their own way too, which I think is really lovely.
It is. And Helen's interaction is kind of like mom to all, in the shop anyway, and she is beloved by the community, isn't she?
She is, yes. Tort, their family bake shop, is really so much more than just a coffee shop. And that is also true in Ashland. The coffee shop that I have sort of based it on, that I visit in real life, is that way. It is the gathering place for the community. So people come in for a delicious pastry or a rich latte, but they're also there to talk about what's going on in town or for a listening ear. And so that piece really is what I focus on in the writing.
I love that. I want a place like that that I can go to. I really do. But you have to live, I think, in a small town and have some type of thing like the Oregon Shakespeare Festival as its grounding. So let's talk about that, because some of the other characters in your books are connected somehow in some way through Shakespeare. And as a matter of fact, isn't it true that there is a different Shakespeare quote on the sandwich board in Tort? If not daily, then at least every so often they change the quote.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
And that's an homage to Jules' father who passed away, correct?
Yes, right. And
so,
Ashland is very unique because it's Shakespearean. It is set up like a Shakespearean village. If you go and visit, you will feel like you're stepping back in time. All of the storefronts, the names of restaurants. I mean, the entire town has kind of wrapped itself around the Oregon Shakespeare Festival.
I have to take a vacation. I really do. And I really want to go to the Pacific Northwest. And I'm going to have to go there just to check it out because you've said so much about it. I feel like I know everyone there. I'm going to be walking around saying, okay, where's Tort? Where's Jules? You know. But I love the fact that you've weaved kind of a thread through all of the characters, including the police, who Jules knows well, both personally and because of their connection to the theater. Her mom's now beau, who is one of the volunteer actors and quotes Shakespeare all the time. It's lovely. You also have the guy who is the artistic director, who is really a confidant, and a friend of Jules, and I like him very much. Let's talk about him because he's an interesting guy, and I think everybody knows someone like him.
Yes, so I call him sort of a frenemy, and that's how their relationship started out, but they have actually become really good friends. His name is Lance, and he is the artistic director of the Oregon Shakespeare Company. And the beauty of having the theater be part of the setting and the story in each book is that I do have a little creative license because, you know, maybe in a different small town set in Minnesota or Texas, you're not going to have someone who is quite as dramatic and maybe quick-witted as Lance.
Yes,
exactly. But it works because, you know, there is that sort of personality type in the theater. So I love getting to play around with that. But he likes to sort of stroll around town in his three-piece suits with his ascots. And, you know, he's very also beloved in town because the theater brings in so many visitors and he's a bit of a celebrity. But he and Jules have really befriended each other. And despite the fact that he has this derriere of being sort of elitist and smug, there's really a tender soul and person under that exterior. And slowly but surely over the course of the series, pieces of that are coming out as he and Jules build a tighter and tighter bond and friendship. It's been unexpected. Initially, he was just going to kind of be a character who was going to be very theatrical. And as I've gone on and gotten to know him more, it's been fun to really bring out this depth in him too.
I like that about the characters, that you are peeling away more layers on even the ancillary characters. I hate to say ancillary, but they're secondary characters to, you know, Jules being, of course, the main character. But we're learning more and more about even her mom, Helen, and we've learned more about her dad even after his death. So, and I love the fact that the bake shop was renoed, which kind of brings to mind the fact that you just went through a reno instead of doing this big holiday celebration, which I would have expected you to be cooking and baking for days and days and days. You kind of did a detour around that this year. Can you share what you did and tell us about it?
Yeah, you bet. I know. I said we should have gone to like somewhere tropical for Christmas and just laid on the beach, but instead we demoed our kitchen, and it is a bit like, is it life imitating art or art imitating life?
Art imitating life,
in
right?
The theory, right. Did I do this
I
on
it.
A subconscious level? I'm not sure. In the series, Jules, part of her journey in coming home and back to Ashland is to modernize the bake shop a bit. They were struggling with old ovens, so they've been saving to get new ovens. And in this book, we learn a little bit about the potential of expansion and unearthing some magical things in a new property.
Yes.
And so I decided I should just do that on my own. So my holiday break was spent scraping layers and layers of paint off our old brick fireplace in our kitchen.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, my Lord. Are you happy with the results?
I am so happy, but I would never do it again. It was the worst project we've ever done. But it's beautiful.
It was
I posted pictures on my Facebook page. It was a DIY.
Did you?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my gosh. Well, next time you have to expand, you know, let's hope that you will expand with a professional and not do it yourself. Because while it's rewarding to do that, it's truly a labor of love. There's not, you know, it's not, unless you're just one of those people who loves to take on DIY, I am not. So, which explains why I sold my big house to move into a very small space, because I don't particularly like doing that kind of stuff. But good on you. Do you have more room to cook and bake now? Did you give yourself any particular upgrades that are remarkable and noteworthy that you can share?
Yeah, so we completely revamped the layout of our kitchen dining room area, and we do have this massive brick fireplace in the kitchen dining room, which I've always loved. And as part of it, there is a brick pizza oven that we have revamped.
Oh, you did it.
So
you
now,
did it. Yum,
yes.
You did it. Oh,
my entire winter is going
living
to be
up
baking
north.
Pizza. I know.
Oh, my God. Ever since the Lodge series, when you had everybody up at the Lodge and they were making the food in the oven, the pizza oven, I just, that can't happen down here. I mean, my brother has a fireplace in his home in Miami, and so he turns the air conditioning real cold and then lights the fireplace on Christmas because, it just doesn't make any sense to have a fireplace here. We just don't do it. People buy those. It looks like a mantle with a fireplace. You plug it in, and that's your fireplace. So, that must be magnificent. And do you have special oven and baking accoutrement in your new kitchen?
Absolutely, yes. We got a convection oven, which I've never baked with convection before, but the few things I've already made, it's life-changing. I can't even tell you the difference.
Really?
So I can't wait to test recipes. Yeah.
Tell me.
I mean, it's just
baking. What can you bake in a convection
oven? Really?
Really
anything. I mean, it's not just baking. You could do a roast or anything. But cookies, I mean, they brown to perfection and evenly and so fast. It cuts the baking time, I would say, by 25%.
Wow. Now, is your convection oven built into your microwave? Is it the same appliance?
No.
Because I used to have one had monster microwave, but it was also a convection oven. So you have it separate and apart from your regular oven, or are they like, by cooking, bilingual in cooking? They can do regular cooking or...
Yes,
I don't know how
they can
it works.
Be both. They're magic now. I know, technology,
oh
I'm telling you.
God.
Yeah, no, it's the regular oven, and then you can opt for convection or just, bake at a standard sort of temperature.
So why would one bake why would you bake in a traditional oven if you have a convection oven?
I don't have any idea, because now that I know what convection can do, I don't think I'll ever go back. Magic.
Does it brown meat and, put a nice crust on things if, like, the regular baking does?
Exactly, yeah. And so with the convection,
really?
The fan kicks on in the back, so it's circulating the heat constantly around 360 degrees what you're baking, yeah.
So I know a lot of times in a traditional oven, bakers and chefs often put pans in water so that the heat is evenly distributed, or not too hot on the bottom or not too hot on the top, depending upon what it is they're preparing. So convection kind of takes away all that, correct?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, still there are bread recipes that might call for like a low steam where you would put a pan on the bottom shelf with boiling water for a low, slow steam. But no, this takes away something. I need some kickbacks or something. I should be like, a spokesperson for
you
the
should.
Convection.
You really
history.
Should.
I don't know.
You really should. Okay, I'm going to take a break and remind everyone, I am talking to the delightful Ellie Alexander, whose delicious books, The Bake Shop Mysteries, just released book number 5 today called Fudge and Jury. We are giving away a copy of that new book to anyone who calls 347-633-9609. If no one calls in, I'm going to make a post on Authors on the Air in Facebook, and then what we'll do is we'll see who goes back and listens to the podcast, and if they can tell me what you did over your holiday vacation and what special thing you installed, they'll go ahead and get a free book too. So let's talk about what's coming up next, because I love to do research, and I especially, because I love your book so much, I'm always checking back on Amazon, because one never knows when we're going to find something really interesting on there. So the first thing I saw was Cozy Case Files, a cozy mystery sampler, which is not yet out, but it's coming out with you and some other authors. It won't be released till January 17. Will you tell us about this book? I love it because it's a kitty cat.
Yeah, well, I know. It's great. This is a sampler that St. Martin's Press is putting out. And they are doing sort of a little highlight of a variety of their cozy mystery authors. So it's Tessa Arlen, Frances Brody, Julia Chapman, Marla Cooper, Ellen Hart. I want to say there are like 15 or 20 authors.
Diane Kelly,
so kind of getting,
Maggie McConnon, Mandy Morton. There are just Paige Shelton, tons of people on there. And I know a lot of these authors who are excellent. So everybody contributes a bit of their book so that and by the way, the pre-order price is zero. So you can go, if you want, and pre-order for zero for your Kindle and take a look at Fudge and Jury by Ellie Alexander and these other wonderful authors. There are, I think, 14 authors altogether. So kudos on that. It's a really good way to get people interested in reading in a new genre and also catching up with their favorite authors. But now I want to talk to you about A Crime of Passion Fruit because, you know, I love the cover. It's very tropical. It's so beautiful. I love the color. Let's talk about A Crime of Passion Fruit. What has Jules got going on now, and will we see Carlos again?
Oh, I know. I get so much reader email and feedback that I never, ever intended on Jules' estranged husband, Carlos, who I think we both have a little bit of a crush on. So in this book,
absolutely,
In Crime of Passion Fruit, I know, she is headed back to the cruise ship. As you mentioned earlier, she spent her first 10 years after graduating from culinary school, working as a pastry chef on a very boutique, sort of foodie, small cruise ship. So she is headed back temporarily. I don't want any fans or readers to freak out because she will definitely find her way back to Ashland. Don't worry. But she's taking a week off to go fill in. The pastry chef for the cruise line has stormed off in a huff. So Carlos, her husband, calls and begs her to come temporarily fill in. So this is definitely a very tropical book. As part of the deal to get her to come to the ship, he sweetens it by offering to have her bring Helen, her mom, and the professor, her mother's fabulous, dashing, lovely gentleman caller, along too. So they're getting a tropical romantic holiday while Jules is on deck whipping up her delicious pastries. And this one I'm very excited about because it's sort of a double mystery. Not only does Jules have to figure out who this mysterious stowaway is on board, but there's also a murder too. So there are kind of two mysterious plots.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, it sounds so good. And I'm so excited about Carlos being back because everybody has fallen in love with Carlos when he went to Ashland. I know I sent you that picture of Antonio Banderas, and we said, yep, that's Carlos, all right.
That's right.
And I just kept saying, oh, my God, just the way he talks to her and behaves, I was like having a hot flash over that. He's just charming, charming, charming. He's a charming Spaniard, that's for sure. So I'm so excited that you're bringing him back. And I'm hoping that somewhere down the line, this is my hope of hopes, because you're really good about moving your stories from book to book kind of close together in time. So I'm kind of hoping that that extra real estate that they are looking at might involve Carlos too. Hint, hint, just in case. But,
hint, hint. Yeah, right.
Yeah, that would be very interesting. So I can't wait. Crime of Passion will release when? When do you plan on having that one out?
Comes out June 27th, I
June
believe.
June 27th, right? Very good. And that's available for pre-order, too, from Macmillan. Go to Kindle and look that up. You can find it there. Now, as you know, I do my research, and there's something really exciting on your page, and I just want to hear about it. Releasing on October 3rd, thereabouts, you have something called Death on Tap. I just need to hear about Death on Tap. Whatever you can dish to us, I would love.
This is a brand new series that comes out, like you said, in October. So Jules and the crew will not be part of this series. This series takes place in Leavenworth, Washington. Are you familiar at all with Leavenworth?
I'm not. Only I know the name of the prison, and that's about it. Is that am I ringing the right bell?
No. Much like Ashland, that is themed, you know, in this sort of Elizabethan style, Leavenworth is a real place in northwestern Washington. And about 1970, maybe 30, 40 years ago now, the town was just in disarray. It had been an old mining town, and lumber and all of those industries had moved out. So they weren't sure what to do with themselves. And they decided to rebrand themselves as a Bavarian German style village. So today
it is
a thriving, tourist community. And every shop in town, from the McDonald's to the hotels, is themed like Bavaria. So you feel like you're walking into a German village, and they have an Oktoberfest and a Mayfest and winter Christmas markets. So it's very similar in tone to the town of Ashland, but this series is going to feature a brewmaster, Sloane Kraus, who is Leavenworth's first and only female brewer, and Death on Tap will be our first introduction to her.
I can't wait. That sounds fabulous. It sounds like so much fun. Oktoberfest and everything else, right? So that'll be wonderful.
Yes.
Congratulations. But you're going to continue the Bake Shop Mysteries, correct?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I'm working on book 7 as we speak. The Death on Tap, that will also, though, have recipes, but they'll be sort of like beer-infused recipes. So, like, you know, beer and cheese fondue and a dark chocolate stout cake and that sort of thing.
Yum, yum. Oh, that sounds fabulous. Well, Ellie, you, as always, you have the most interesting things happening in your life. Tell me, what's the most fun part about being a writer? Is it the cooking? Is it the research? Or is it putting pen to paper? Is it hearing from fans? Tell me what's the most fun for you, please.
For sure, it's meeting readers face-to-face or getting to have conversations like this, that these characters who I've created in my head take on this life of their own, and then people becoming attached to them is just the most stunning and humbling experience ever. I love it.
Well, I tell you what, I have a complete visual of every single character in your books because I've read all of them, as you know, and I just enjoy them so much. I can't recommend them enough to listeners and to my reader friends who like cozy culinary mysteries. They are tons of fun. They're very original and really don't think you can figure it out because it's not a deep, hard thriller. You really cannot figure it out. I'm a pretty good, you know, whodunit kind of gal, and I'm not so sure. This last one stumped me completely. I was stunned by the ending. So good on you, and keep doing it. And will you come back when these other books release? Because, you know, I want to talk to you again. I want to read every – I got to read the next book about Carlos, too. You know, I'm almost thinking, gosh, he needs to have a novella or something in between. So hint, hint. You know, one of those in-between novellas that you do between regular books and everything. He's got to go and try out the new kitchen, doesn't he? Yes. So tell everybody where we can find you on the webs, please.
Yes, you can find me. I'm on social media as Ellie Alexander, author on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest. And then online at BakeShopMysteries.com.
Excellent. Ellie, I always love talking to you. We have the best time, and I'm so glad that your kitchen remodel turned out just the way you want it. I'm thrilled to know that you're going to be starting a new series. How exciting for you. And I wish you so much success in this new year. I think it's going to come to you in spades. Will you come back later on?
Absolutely, of course. We'll have to have more recipes too.
We absolutely do. And I'd like you to come back on and maybe, you know, pick out an author that you're friends with that you like and you want to interview and come on the show and sit behind the microphone and let me just be the tech person. Will you do that?
Oh, that would be a blast, of course.
Yeah, so let's keep emailing about that, okay?
Sounds great, yeah, for sure.
In the meantime, Happy New Year, and thank you so much for being my guest today. Ellie Alexander for Fudge and Jury. Her new book launches today. What a great thing. Thank you so very much, Ellie, and much success to you.
Thank you so much, Pam. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
And that's it for this afternoon, folks. But tonight I'll be back with Terry Shames, who writes the Craddock Mysteries. You're going to love it. And Rob Brunet, who is quite the thriller writer himself, noir crime fiction writer, is going to be my guest co-host. I have a feeling I'm just going to want to sit back and listen to these two. Join us tonight at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific. Thank you for being with me, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.